Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you here with us. It is Monday, January 30th, and it is chilly here in Central Texas. We've got a winter storm advisory coming through, and the temperatures are plummeting, so they say we're going to have up to quarter inch of ice on the road. So no one's going anywhere around here. Hope you are doing well wherever you're at. Appreciate you tuning in and listening to this podcast. We have just such a strong growing audience. It just amazes me, and we're so grateful for you. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals, and we're not broadcast professionals, but we're mortgage professionals, and we do our best to do a great podcast. And it's, again, for you mortgage professionals and anyone in the real estate and business, as well as any of the tech companies, many tech companies that support our industry. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. And again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Say a special thank you to our sponsors. We got Finastra, does a great job out there with the Fusion Mortgage Bot solution, the number one fintech company in the world. We're working closely with them. They're making a big push into the IMB space this year, so you're going to be hearing more about Finastra. Then also Candor Technologies. I love what Tom and his team, Tom and Sarah, are doing there at Candor. They got so much innovation going on around the area of decisioning. It's an underwriting system, and it's so much more. They actually have their underwriting technology is so strong that they were awarded patents for their unique solution and a unique approach to this solution. You got to check out Candor and how it optimizes your loan delivery and workflow operations, and very powerful. Also, I want to say thank you to Form Free. We love our friends at Form Free. Christy Moss, communicating with her the other day. And also go listen to the latest news that we recorded on October 17th with Brent Chandler. It's the RIKI, R-I-K-I. And it is has to do with the account form that they've just set up the program with, a re-verification of employment requirement. And you can check it out with the podcast we did on October 17th. With 17th, and also did another one with Kevin from Freddie Mac. So lots of good stuff going on over there. Also Total Expert, which is the total solution when it comes to being able to increase loyalty and drive growth for banks, credit unions, lenders, IMBs, financial services. Dan Cattinelli was on the podcast on October 21st. Listen to the big vision that they have, as well as Simple Nexus, their mortgage software and technology for the modern lender. They do a great job of really bringing some of the connectivity. They go into all the spaces where others aren't, and they connect it all together. It's really great. We had Ben Miller, the founder, Ben Miller, the founder of Simple Nexus, on the podcast, the co-founder, on December 30th, 2022. So go check out those. Also, a special thank you to the MBA, as well as Lenders One, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative, as well as KnowledgeCoup, Mobility MMI, Modix, and Mortgage Advisory Tools. Grateful for all of our sponsors. I want to talk about Lenders One and the TMC. They both have their upcoming conferences the first week of July. The first week in March. I think it's a cold weather. I'm wishing for warmer temperatures here, so I'm thinking of July. But anyway, Mortgage Collaborative, the TMC, is having theirs in warm San Diego, and Lenders One is going to have theirs in Las Vegas. So come on out to both of these. We'd love to. Well, it's actually they're on top of each other this year, so they're right on the same time. So you have to pick which one you want to go to, but I wish I could go to both of them. These are such powerful conferences. We'll look forward to seeing you at whichever one you select. Also, again, check out all the other sponsors on our sponsorship website. Want to talk about February 1st. We have our guest appearance with Keith Pulaski of Radius Financial. We're going to be talking about driving efficiencies and reducing mortgage manufacturing costs. Keith, I know this is not going to be a number many of you are going to accept. You're going to challenge it, but you need to go listen to this podcast. They have got their Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loan origination costs. Get this. Total all-in operational costs, $350 to $600 per loan. I'm serious. And their government loans, $1,300 to $1,400. And you're going, not possible. It's just not possible. Like it. You got to tune in and listen to the podcast we're going to be airing tomorrow with Keith Pulaski. Keith and I have worked together on the project with Radius since 2015. And we were in there early on helping them start the process. And I keep having Keith back just to encourage you guys to look at your costs. What does the MBA study say? The costs around somewhere between $10,000 to $12,000. I've heard different numbers. I think it's up again, up over $11,000 because of the cutbacks in the volume of loans. We just haven't made enough cutbacks because of the volume of loans. I know cutback means layoffs. We'd hate to see layoffs happening. But you got to look at for ways to cut costs. And finding what Keith has done, and Keith and Sarah at Radius Financial, you're going to enjoy that podcast February 1st. Also, want to give a shout out to Adam DeSanctis, Les Parker, Matt Graham. We've got Mr. Kittle here live today. Really excited about that. Alice Alvey couldn't make it, but we always love having Alice on. Alan Pollock and Mark Helm, my co-host. Mark, good to have you here. So glad.
Glad to be here, sir. Glad to be here.
You bet. Mr. Kittle, good to have you here as well. Looking forward to having you participate in all of this good stuff. There's so much going on, but let's start off today. You betcha. Dave Kittle and Mark are just, they're brothers from another mother. They're just such good friends, and we've been in this industry for a long, long time, but we're just so grateful. You form friendships in this industry, folks, and you form them, and they just last for a lifetime. I'm so grateful for these two gentlemen as well as all the other regulars on the podcast. Let's get over to the MBA's Mortgage Minute with Adam DeSanctis and hear what the MBA has for us today.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSanctis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Here's what you need to know. Last week, MBA Senior Vice President and Chief Economist Mike Fratantoni testified during a Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council's Appraisal Subcommittee hearing on appraisals. Fratantoni provided testimony to the subcommittee detailing MBA's recommendations on ways to reform the appraisal regulatory structure, as well as our ongoing advocacy efforts in combating appraisal bias and leveraging technology to improve valuation accuracy. MBA's residential policy committees continue to work to provide detailed suggestions to agencies, investors, and guarantors on policy changes that could expand and diversify the appraiser workforce, streamline appraisal processes, and ultimately reduce bias. MBA will continue to follow this issue and provide relevant updates. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, very important. Very, very important. You know, the whole talk about eliminating bias, I mean, they're really interesting. Mark, I mean, when you're looking at the appraisal process, and David, I want to get your thoughts, how much bias do you really think is in this? In the process, my thinking is not much. It's certainly not conscious, but am I wrong in that, Mark? Let me get your thoughts, David. Mark, I think you're muted out. If you're saying something, you're muted out. Go ahead.
We hear people saying that, David, but I think the problem with the appraisal process, it's not an exact science. It never will be an exact science. And anytime you have an exact science thing, it's going to be a little hardcore. When you don't have an exact science, it's going to be open for speculation, opinion, observation, and bias, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think we see some of that because it happens, because you can have an appraiser from one side of the track appraising something on the other side of the track, and he's got an opinion about what the values are here and the values are there, and that's going to play in. I don't think it's as big a problem as people might think it is, but unfortunately, when the problem does happen, it stands out. And that makes people very much aware of it as we go down the road. And that's the problem with it. Anytime you have a problem with something, it stands out. And when you do have a case, they're usually bad cases.
Really
and they make
bad.
It look
yeah.
like it's rampant and going all through the industry and whatnot. But that's my belief. I'm interested to hear what Mr. Kittle has to say.
Yeah. Mr. Kittle, thoughts on bias?
Hey, David. Mark, thanks. I totally agree with Mark. I'll deep dive it a little bit further. You know, when I first got in the business back in the 70s, it wasn't an exact science like we have today. You didn't have the regulation that you have. You didn't have scrutiny. Certainly, they can walk in and laser a room so you get exact measurements on a home today, which you may not have gotten back in the 80s and 90s. So to Mark's point, when there is an issue, it sticks out like a sore thumb. But I think it's less today than it was in the past.
We've come a long way since then. Yeah, less and less subjectivity in this. But, I mean, there's still, I'm sure there's some aspect of it because of the subjectivity. And when you have a subject, any level of subjectivity in a deal, that just gets to be more and more.
You know, you can still argue over comparables, right, Dave?
Exactly.
And it is. It's an opinion. At the end of the day, it's not an exact science.
But I am encouraged.
To your point about the measurements on houses, I remember early in my career when sometimes appraisers would miss the square footage in houses by about 10 to 15%, very commonly. And usually it was newer appraisers in the business that were learning all the scopes and not seeing a nook and cranny that meant one way and not measuring it exactly right and all that stuff. That's a real good point about the electronic measurement.
Well, you know, look, everything's online now, right?
Yeah.
But they save the appraisal. You can go back and get the house. You can get the description of it's a newer house. So you really, those issues now are not, you can't make a mistake. So if you do, to Mark's point earlier, it's blatant. It just comes down to the comparables and then how much they give up or down in an educated opinion, what it's worth or what it's not worth.
Yeah.
But I don't hear people crying about appraisals much anymore. I just don't, especially.
Yeah, I don't hear it either.
With the appreciation of property.
Yeah. We're going to see more and more developments in the technology area. And we got Alan Pollock just joined in on the podcast. Good to have him joining in. Better late than never, Alan. So glad to have you here. Alan,
hey,
are you hearing anything more about the automation AVMs? What's your the tech angle on AVMs and where are we going with this?
Well, look, I don't hear anything different now than I did 10 years ago when there were multiple AVM models out there and people contest what the opinion is versus what the computer says. So I just thought of, like, what if we flipped the whole industry on its side and we forced the home inspection to be done first and have that as part of the opinion with the appraisal? Because a lot of times you'll see properties that need a lot of work and they'll either sit on the market longer or based on certain demand of certain areas, they'll go quick. But they need still need $100,000, $200,000 worth of investment. Does that mean that house should be appraised at the same value as everybody next to it? It's opinion, right?
Yeah. It's you're not going to know that until you get in there and start doing the inspections on these homes. And more, I mean, they still do that for the most part. Although we're seeing an increase in AVMs. There's some new technology out there. If you there's some previous podcasts. We'll put them in our notes on this. We're going to move on to this topic. But when Adam brought up about the appraisals and his report from the MBA, I wanted to just kind of get everyone's thoughts on that. We're going to see some development on that. Go, Mark. Or David, whichever.
David, if I can chime in there, I'd like to. I've experienced this recently myself, but in trying to sell a house. But, you know, you have an issue in a house nowadays where a house has to be repiped. Or you're changing out a major HVAC system, et cetera, or put a roof on a house because it's a couple years away from being no good. You're talking about major, major expenses that do have a detriment on the value that most appraisers don't. They might pick up a roof, but it's highly unlikely they'll pick up the pipes or the HVAC or whatever the case might be. And and God knows if they miss out on something where you got mold infestation or something like that in the house that people don't know about. So I think the property inspection idea that Alan mentioned is, I like that thought, Alan. I really like that thought.
Yeah.
If we care enough to buy a house that we have an inspection done before we buy it, we ought to care to have it up front enough to know before the appraisal's done on it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Al. Yeah. Well, it's really interesting that you bring this up because I was just in Palm Springs for a family wedding. We have family that lives there in the Palm Springs area. And I asked her, my cousins, to drive me around and show me a little bit of the area and take me to her home. I hadn't seen it at the hotel. The wedding was at the Indian Wells Hyatt Regency. And so she took me to her home, and she says, by the way, listen to this. I said, what's this one selling for? I always ask. When you're in real estate, you always ask, what's that one selling for? What's that one selling for? Because you're amazed at the prices. It's just crazy. She says, yeah, but what's really interesting in this particular area, I can't remember what the name of the subdivision is. It doesn't matter. But she says, they just issued a $100,000 per home assessment because they have to redo the clubhouse. And that came, and someone who just bought in there wasn't aware of that. Some friends of ours just bought, and it wasn't in the appraisal, and it was, it got missed there. But they end up buying a home and having to write another check for $100,000 in that on something that should have been caught, should have been disclosed. So, you know, a good appraiser will kind of look at the homeowner association and have some idea about that, because that does have a direct impact. But a lot of interesting information. We could spend time on this topic, but we want to move on. Let's get over into the market data, what's going on, and let's start with Les Parker and his macro view of the markets. Les, what do you have to say, and what is your music parody for us today?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Why do investors go and make things so complicated? We see the way they're acting like somebody else gets us frustrated. Confusing messages complicate trading. Several consecutive strong auctions support the view that inflation is slowing rapidly. Meanwhile, the dollar and gold act like they question the Fed's leadership. They think the Fed blinks and that the concerted effort to depreciate the dollar's reserve currency status might work. Bonds don't necessarily agree. They expect the Fed to reach a terminal rate of at least 4.50 and stay elevated for a while. Honestly, and promise us we're never going to find bonds fake it. These views are my own. No at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah. Good job, Les Parker, Gary Canterbone teaming up on that segment. I love Les's thoughts on that. Yeah, there seems to be some disconnects about how the market's looking at gold and how they're looking at what the Federal Reserve. You can even get Les's light newsletter to read this and get his unique insights. I tell you, they're really good. And so many people, I mean, some of the top, I could name the executives at the top institutions are all reading Les's newsletter. So if you want to look at what's going on and get some insights into the markets, sign up for tmspotlight.com. And you'll get it daily. And if you put in the word in the sign-up code, and if you put in the code POWER for PowerSeller, you will get the paid version for free. PowerSeller's picking it up. Isn't that a good deal? It really is. Good stuff. So we're going to get to talking about the markets in just a second. Matt Graham is typically here and does it for us live, but he had to I don't know if he's getting froze out up there up in the Pacific Northwest. He's up in the Portland area. But he sent in a recording. I think he said he's really busy today, and it's like crazy. So we'll listen to his comments by recording. So Matt Graham, I know he doesn't do any music parody like Parker does, but we always like his information. So here's Matt Graham.
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Last week, we were heading into the week thinking that it would be probably pretty uneventful, pretty sideways, and pretty range-bound given the fact that there were no big-ticket economic reports on tap. That might seem like a little bit of an odd claim considering we did have the first look at GDP for the fourth quarter of 2022, and it is true that sometimes that does get the market moving, but in this case it was close enough to consensus that it did not. Same story with PCE inflation. Interesting story there for that report, since that has often been described as the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, yet there have been few, if any, instances of it causing a big reaction in markets in 2022 and now in early 2023, largely because the market focuses its reaction on CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which comes out about 2 weeks earlier on average. So in terms of 10-year yields, the range was very well contained. We had been following a range of 3.42 to 3.62, and we stayed well within that. 3.42 was achieved on Wednesday, and we never got remotely as high as 3.62. Generally, 3.55 to 3.56 was the ceiling, and that was seen on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, or close to it. We're starting the new week right in line with last week's weakest levels, two different spellings there, and we are looking at an entirely different landscape in the week ahead with several significant economic reports, as well as the Fed announcement on Wednesday. Monday gives us a little bit of a day off from the significant data. There are no significant scheduled reports today, but they pick up tomorrow and they don't stop until the end of the week. We have Chicago PMI tomorrow, 9:45, consumer confidence. Also the employment cost index, which is a report that Fed Chair Powell has mentioned on several occasions. Wednesday, job openings and labor turnover surveys, a bit of a sleeper at 10 o'clock. That has been a market mover several times in the past few months after really not ever being a market mover until, the post-COVID timeframe or the Fed's tightening of policy post-COVID. And ISM manufacturing at 10 o'clock, ADP employment 8:15, and then in the afternoon, the Fed rate decision, where they are almost guaranteed to hike by 25 basis points at 2 p.m., and the Powell press conference at 2:30 p.m. Thursday probably has the least consequential data, productivity and costs, factory orders, jobless claims, challenger layoffs. But then Friday, we get non-farm payrolls and ISM non-manufacturing. So between all of that data and those events, including the Fed, of course, it is a significantly higher possibility that bonds will be breaking out of the trading range that has kept them fairly well contained for the past 4 weeks now. This is the range that we were in during the first part of December, rose out of in the second part of December, and quickly moved back into by the second week of January, and have been inside ever since. That's going to do it for today. Back to you.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it very much. Let's get some thoughts on the market. Mr. Kittle, let's start with you. Any reflections as you're starting to look? You were at the IMB last week. What is the, when you look at the market conditions, what is the general feel from those that you talk to, whether they be the vendors or the lenders that were there? What's the general thoughts about interest rates? Not going up? What's your...
Well, that depends on two things there, David. Attendance at, as they're going to be at most all conferences, was off. People are, even if a company's attending, they're sending less people, maybe just one. And it was certainly weighed to the vendor side as far as the percentage of vendors to lenders that attended the conference. But talking on both sides, because you know it affects everybody. It depends on how long you've been in the business as to what your perception of this market is. And so those that have been in the shorter term are in a bigger panic than those of us who have seen something like this happen 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times over the years. And although each one is different, this one's severe. And so there's a great deal of pessimism out there right now. And they're hoping that the Fed, I think, it's baked in. They're going to raise it 25 bips. I don't think they'll do any more than that. I think the market's already baked that in. Alice is on today. She probably has a better perception of that than I do, but I think that's probably what will happen. And people are holding on for the next 12 months or so and hunkering down. A lot of M&A going on.
Oh, lots of it. Yeah, amazing. That and
Wanda. Everywhere.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about
that.
There
were people there looking to sell, and there were people there looking to buy. So it was an interesting conference.
Yeah, real interesting. I think that I heard that, like one person says, they're staying away in crowds. I thought that's a great statement. It's unfortunate, but it's a sign of the market. I mean, people just cannot afford to expend it. They're cutting. And how do you go today? I'm sorry, we need to cut you, but I'm going to this expensive conference out there. You say, well, it's not that expensive. No, it isn't. I mean, it's really important. But I think one of the things, David, when you listen to what's going on in the market, it's the value of TMC and Lenders One, these co-ops that are out there. I wonder if there's just not going to be. I know Lenders One and both TMC, they've got really good attendance at both of the conferences. I mean, mortgage lenders are showing up for these. Why do you think that is? Why is it that they're avoiding an IMB conference at the MBA, but signing up for the collaboratives?
Well, it's the value they receive from you know, perceived value that they receive either at TMC or Lenders One. And you get into something, what you get out of it, what you put into it. So you have to attend to get something out of it. But they perceive that there's more value for the members. I mean, that's what we hear, not being negative to association out there, but that's the perception.
No,
they attend because they get value out of it.
It's, if we're not bringing value, we're not getting people there. And there's other factors that go into this, maybe what's impacting the NBA. You know, I think what it is what you guys are really doing is bringing people together. I know the collabs and what you're doing there. Same thing at Leader One. We have the meetings that go on. There are amongst the peers. And it's the peer talk where if you're in misery, you want to talk to someone else who's going through it with you and not just sit around and commiserate on how miserable things are, right? But to really figure out what are the solutions that are working for different ones. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, there are solutions out there, right?
Yeah.
It's whether or not you want to, and you've got to invest in solutions right now. It can't just be cuts right now. You still have to invest and go forward and grow. This is an opportunity to grow your company in a business and in a market like this, and there are ways to do it. And sitting around, in a collab lab with your peers is of great value to our members.
Yep, that's absolutely the case. And Alan, when you look at what you could do, you were dialed in when I to the podcast where I was talking about Keith Pulaski over at Raise Financial, how through technology, not through anything else, but through technology, they have cut the cost to originate, the operational cost to originate a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loan from $350 to $600 per loan. And on government loans, $1,300 to $1,400. And you go like this, that's impossible. You can't do that. Well, I know that company. I've been in there. I've been a part of the process of helping them since 2015. I know they are. Keith is not one to stretch the truth. It's really amazing. So, Alan, I'd love to get your perspective on this topic because we, as many lenders say, Alan, it's technology is a death by a thousand cuts. And there is some truth to that.
Well, it's death by a thousand cuts, and you pay death by a thousand cuts, too. That you each cut cost you. But anyways, there's actually some very impressive progress with technology in our industry. There's some folks that have done extremely well. It comes down to, and by the way, a lot of people say, well, who's the best tech vendor in our industry? They're all great tech vendors. They wouldn't be here if they weren't.
I'll tell you, the ones I'm a little partial to are those that are sponsors of our podcast. So I think they're the best.
Course,
I think we got the best.
But the reality is it's a people and technology mix that manage, deploy, and make the software do what it does. But it's also on your side as a lender, you have to implement the technology and support it, right?
Yeah.
And if you can do that well, then you can see how to modify and update kind of the orchestration of your business. But if you just expect everything to stay the same and just put technology in and does its thing, then it's just going to cost you more money and it's probably not going to meet all your needs.
And we just picked up a new client, Alan, recently, and we went, one of the first things we do is go in looking at how their technology is set up, and they have one of the leading LOSs in there. And what wasn't turned on and how much money they were spending and not getting the value that was in the pricing that they already had. There wasn't like any new features they had to go out and get. They just hadn't turned it on, and it really comes up to the setup. And I think it comes also, especially when you have the cuts that we've made in the industry now, I think it gets dangerous when we start cutting out the people that have the real deep insights to the knowledge of why we did what we did, because then you have to go back and figure it all out again. And so there's really a lot of wisdom and discernment on where we're cutting and how we're cutting, to make sure that we don't mess up on the technology front. All right, Alan, I'll let you comment on that, and then I want to get over to Mark.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that's 100% accurate. There is a term out there right now, David, called digital immunity. And
digital immunity.
That's right. It's about the resiliency. So instead of getting sick, right, and in your business looking at all the risk and protecting yourself and your customers, meaning borrowers, from fraud, applications and technology need to do better. They need to look at high-risk scenarios. They need to understand how data and analytics drive content, and that's called digital immunity. So, and then it helps you avoid, right? So if you look at automated underwriting, right, the things that you can do to identify defects up front, that's digital immunity. If you look at making sure that you're using technology to look at data and make sure you don't have any fair lending risk, to make sure that the Safe Harbor Act is in place, to make sure, right, that's your digital immunity. So it is about origination. But
that's
you know
really
what?
Good point.
You could have the coolest, the slickest, the most AI groundbreaking. You know, we read these press releases; they're funny. The best tech out there, but all you need is a couple loans that you didn't have that digital immunity for, and it's going to cost you more than you ever thought. So it's a good mix, David. People are just so important. And by the way, on the comment you made a moment ago, just thinking back to last week, I think we have to still head over to Alice, but I did want to mention that just the one topic about, we did talk a few times in regards to making sure that you're looking at release notes, right, and you're remembering the things that your vendors have been putting out there.
Yeah. Checking out all, I mean, staying on top of what's going on, whether it's, the updates coming out of all the circulars coming out of FHA, the release notes, or not release notes, the communications coming out of Fannie Freddie or any of the investors, and then the updates. There's a lot of reading going on out there. I mean, that's why I love the Apple computers, because I can just highlight and have it read it to me. For us in dyslexia land, it's a wonderful thing. Mark, a couple thoughts on any of that we're talking about here, reducing costs, looking at what? Yeah, go ahead.
I got a few, David. I think when Mr. Kittle talked about the cyclical nature of our environment and what we've been in the mortgage industry, we've certainly seen it all, and I think I've seen all the cycles he's seen because we're about the same age. But I want to bring something to everybody's attention on this call that we don't think about sometimes. We haven't really seen bad times. We haven't seen the Great Depression. We haven't seen the crash of the stock market. We did see the debacle on the subprime lending in the 2007, 8, and 9 time period that carried on after that, that made major changes and shifts in our industry happen because of what happened with the way we were lending money for a while. So I'll say this about that. I mentioned before that early on in my career, I assumed a 15.5% FHA mortgage and was glad to do so. Why was it? Because interest rates were 18 and 19%. And at that time, we all said, oh, man, they can't come down. This is so high. They're higher than credit cards now and blah, 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 blah. But they did. So everything kind of changes in the cycle, and it happens. So am I concerned about where we are today? I'm very much concerned. I'm more concerned about how fast it happened. It turned on a dime. And I've never seen, and we've never seen anything happen that fast in the industry before, which paints a real bad picture for it. But what it does, it allows us as an industry to kind of self-cleanse during this period. It allows us to look at our better people to make sure we keep treating them right. It allows us to look at new technology. It allows us to control our costs better than we had before. It allows us to really stand back and take a whole new appreciation of what we're doing. Some people leave the business during this time period. Some people come into this business that they're in much stronger because they paid attention to what happened, what caused it, and how they can improve on their performance, not only through staffing efficiencies and those things out. So I don't necessarily think what's happened's really been bad for us. It's probably something that was needed. When we were paying underwriters $150,000 a year when they used to make $75,000 or $80,000 simply because we couldn't hire any, that kind of showed you how bad the industry had flip-flop on, particularly in one item, and it happened in more places. And so we had a lot of people that came into the market, maybe didn't know what they were doing because they could stumble on their own feet and still make a living making loans because the volume was out there. And the refis were handed to them like on a silver platter. Now people have to work for their living. The refis aren't out there. We got to control costs. We got to build better training for our people. We got to make sure we got people that do what they're doing. And if we do those things, we're going to be successful, and we're going to come out a little stronger and better at the end than we have been in the past. And so I kind of look at it, live and learn, and let's get through the cycle and make those positive things happen.
Great, great perspective. And one of the listeners just says, yes, unfortunately, I was just cleansed out of the industry, and they put that in quotes. You know, if you're one of the ones that have had, unfortunately, to get cut in that thing, I think we hope you will not leave the industry. We really do. We're going to need you back. And I think this comes to the point of us all being recognizing the cyclicality of this industry. But this is a really, really important industry to the fabric of our nation, to the fundamentals of what we dream about, home ownership, and what we can do to make a difference. We do have to recognize the cyclicality of it. If you're going to go demand that super big high salary, and you're going to go with that wave, then you're going to have to deal with the consequences of that. You may get yourself finding you're going to be unemployed when that cuts happen, because they do look at where they can have the biggest impact with the fewest amount of losses. So it's one of those things to be cognizant of that. And a number of people have said, I made a switch to a company, and the company I left has never had a track record of laying people off. They didn't pay the best, but they were a good company, good management, and they paid consistently. Tell your audience, David, to make sure that they be mindful of that in this next cycle, because there will be another big upswing in the cycle. I mean, we're cyclical, and it seems like everyone just goes further and faster, and it's just more pronounced on the upside, and it's certainly been pronounced on the downside. So what is this all? Where is this all heading? Well, normally we'd have Alice Alvey getting us perspective on the what's going on as far as the update related to the regulatory world, but Alice got pulled into a meeting. I love giving Bill a bad time when he does that, but anyway, she is a valuable resource to our friends there at Union Home, so we understand why they pull her in. But we do have Mr. Kittle here, who is just at the IMB. As before we move over to Alan, David, do you have any thoughts about other reflections on the conference last week?
No, but if I might just make a comment on top of what Mark just said, you know, this will be kind of out of left field and off the wall. Probably heard me say it before, but I opened all three of my lending companies over the years in down markets when things were not that good. It's a great time to get into business. So I would encourage, there's so many good people out there available right now. And if you know a few, get some together and go start your own mortgage company. Mm-hmm. You'll find out what it's like to have to meet a payroll. You'll find out about how important controlling expenses and salaries are. And you'll find out that loan officer comp, which is one thing we need to address in this industry, has gotten way out of hand over the last 10 years. Yeah. And so I don't say that tongue in cheek and, you know, to be funny, consider it. People are listening. Mm-hmm. Go start your own company. Go develop relationships and build your own empire instead of working for somebody else. And I think it's a good time to do it.
One of our business owners that's just is listening to us live just wrote in and says, I love David Kittle, but tell him to shut up. I don't want any of my loan officers leaving me to start their own company. But that's what happened. I mean, I love David Kittle, but tell him to shut up. We don't want to lose our people. We don't need your officers.
No, remember, I want to piggyback. For those people who have been cleansed, I said, go open your own company.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Mark, David, I want to piggyback on that. I certainly didn't mean the everybody losing their job to be a cleansing. That's not exactly what I was talking about. But I want to do a little clarification point on that. I think we as an industry, and I include myself as part of that, and all of us on the phone and most of the people listening, have been a part of a little bad phenomena, and that is any time that we have a market that's been as strong as it's been for as long as it's been, when all people have to do to originate a loan is pick up a phone to get it started, we've lost the basics that I learned in the business decades ago about being a good salesperson, how to work realtors, how to work angles, how to work builders, how to get those loan applications. And that's not been fair to the people out there, so we created a culture of loan officers that really didn't have the benefits what some of us older people have learned through the decades of being in the business. And that's a failure of our industry and of a lot of companies that really didn't invest the time and the effort in the loan officers to make them successful other than doing refis. And if they had, some of these people, a lot of these folks would have survived in the market because we would have still strong business. I know companies today that have some very strong loan officers. I know one particular company, the guy originates about 50 loans a month, and because he's developed a process that he goes through, kind of like Nick Saban's process, I get. So he knows how to go to borrowers. He knows how to solicit loans. and he does a good job at it. And we've kind of failed as an industry on that, I think, and maybe we need to learn our lesson on that. And I hope that most of the people that left the industry have an opportunity when the market rebounds to come back in the industry if that's what they want to do. But I would suggest in the meantime, if you're looking for another job and it's in sales, be adaptive in sales and make sure that everything you learn in sales is transferable from one business to another so okay. that you, the basics at least, so you can do a better job in sales as you go down the road, because that's going to be your success in the mortgage origination project, sales and customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll shut up now. I'm sorry.
No, no. Great, great, good, good point. And, no, and for those of you listening that may have been, quote, unquote, are let go of, and it's our heart goes out to you. But I like what David says, you know, consider opening up a company. I know one particular group of originators underwriters that went out and set up a company to do contract underwriting. They said, I can't get a job, but I can underwrite loans. So they went out and set up a company to contract onshore. And they said, we've had the offshoring underwriting, so we're going to do this. And they right-sized their incomes. And guess what? They said, you know what? We're doing pretty well. And we guess where we're getting our first customer was? The company that laid us off. So I think it's a lot of – it's making that old saying, making lemonade out of lemons that are handed to us. That's an overused statement, my gosh. But it is one of those things where look for the opportunities in this. They are here. And we're going to come through this. We're going to get on the other side of it very much. So thank you, Mr. Kittle. All of that, I'll let you have the final word on that segment, and then we'll get over to Alan. Anything you want to add as we chat on this?
No, not that, I think from the people what? That are calling into you. I might have said enough, but it really is. It's a good time. I was.
They love you, Kittle.
But I firmly believe
you know that.
That's all right, David. I see the headlines tomorrow. Mark Helms said the mortgage sales market's been cleansed. I don't need that.
Yeah, no, I think.
Certainly. We have great empathy for everybody in the business. Look,
we do. We're all going through it. Whether you're in a company or
business before.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did want to go into with you, David, before we got on, I almost forgot about it, and that is I've gotten several inquiries from clients who are saying, Dave, look at the layered bonus structure that's in it, the BIPs, the basis points that are in production, and we're really looking at that. And we have discovered just how much we started adding it up. We're going, how much is built into our pricing to support the various layers. They have the branch manager overrides. They have a regional manager overrides. They have the production manager overrides. Some of them have multiple layers of that. And they're going through and addressing that. And no one wants to touch loan originator compensation. No one just wants to touch that one. But they're willing. There now seems to be a movement to start looking at the cost to do that. And I'm hearing from a number of people. Because I did it for one client. One of my clients asked me to do a little bit of a study on it. And I did. Called a lot of people up. And they go, don't tell anybody, but we're looking at making some cuts there. And so what some of people are doing, they're going, we're cutting out layers of management, production management. We're just cutting out. And the head of production is having more direct reports during this time. And because they tried to go in and adjust the basis points override. Well, it's like, you know, it's like your entitlements when it comes to taxes. Go touch someone else's entitlement, but don't you mess with my compensation. Don't you mess with my entitlement. And I think there's a
problem.
Well,
let me comment on that, Dave.
Yeah, please.
You know, I did mention that a few minutes ago, that loan officer comp is something we need to look at. It's unsustainable. But if I'm running a big production office, right, or even a small one, you know, and the company's struggling, you know what I'm doing as a production manager? I'm going to go back out and produce.
Yeah, exactly right. Become a producing manager.
Why can't you do that? You got to be a production manager because you have experience and you know what you're doing. You have your contacts. Go regenerate those and help the company. You got to do whatever it takes today to bring in deals. So
I think everybody needs to
just reevaluate what they're doing.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you the name of the company and the individuals that are doing this, but there's one company called me that we've – and we talk a lot about culture, David and Mark. We talk a lot about – and Alan. We talk about the importance of having a culture and communicating out to our companies of where we're at, where the industry is at. In one particular company where they came together and approached management and say, we don't want to be cut. Here's what we are proposing. And they cut their basis points override. And several of the regional managers said, we lost a branch manager. I'm going to take on managing that branch before we go replace that person. So everyone's, you're working harder and you're going in and doing some things. Those are the things where you create the right culture. Everyone's interested in the health of the whole piece rather than my compensation, the two-year-old mine. Don't touch mine. So anyway, we could go on and on about it. I think it's just a really important topic. And for those of you that are executives looking at this, you got to look at it. And again, I'll come back to this, is what is your playbook? What are the values? What are you telling your people? And are you empowering that enablement or are you challenging it? I think it's so important that we challenge these things. And we could go on that one a long, long time because that gets us in the amen corner. Everyone's going to go, amen. But who's going to lead out and start doing it? That's what we try to do with this podcast, folks. We're here to be thought leaders. What needs to be talked about? The things that elephant is in the room. But anyway, let's move over to technology or we're going to get started down a path that could go somewhere else. But Alan Pollock, you're here with us talking about one of the ways to cut costs. We talked about death by 1,000 cuts. We actually talked about Keith Pulaski. Through technology, we're drastically reducing their cost. I should say it's not just through technology, Alan. And you've said this several times. The most important thing you're doing to implement new technologies is to understand your processes. And if you don't understand your process, and first of all, know them and intimately well, have them mapped out, something that we do very well, and we're happy to do a webinar on this for your company. And you know, it's more like we want to give this information out because we want to help companies. But there's a lot of companies that try to do this on their own. I'm thinking of one major leader one out there, and they say, tried, they failed, they call us back, look, and we tried. We called you and talked to you about coming in. Then we said, let's save the money and try to do it ourselves, and they failed. It's not that some can and do it, but it really starts, Alan, with the importance of understanding your processes and evaluating those, and then fitting the technology into those processes that exist, or you have to reevaluate as you introduce more technology. And this is what Keith and his team have done. They've gone in and they found technology and then they've reinvented their processes to fit in there and all driven by one thing. How can we save money and shorten the cycles? So, Alan, with that, tee it up and toss it to you.
All right. Well, that was a good lead in, David. Thank you. So we've talked about those things in the past weeks. And David, I wonder if you have what's called phantom vibration syndrome.
Phantom
and I'm
vibration.
Sure you don't know what it is because your digital immunity is not up to speed. But yeah. Phantom vibration syndrome is the name for when someone thinks their phone is vibrating, but it isn't.
Oh, that's like when you get off a boat and that has been and you've been moving in the waves for a while.
That's
you
right.
Get off the boat and the
sea legs.
And you know you're still feeling the sea legs. Exactly right. Yep.
Yeah.
Never heard that
your
one.
Big term of the day. You know, there's so many things to talk about.
I'm not going to sleep so much as well as I used to. I've got phantom vibration. All right,
great.
Sorry. Continue on.
That's all right. There's so many things to talk about. I have two quick topics. One is somebody actually asked me, can I do anything in tech without spending money? And I said, sure, you can use Microsoft Excel to look at your data. So I'm going to talk about that for a moment, but I also want to talk about ChatGPT because it is a big thing. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's using it. Everyone's scared of it. Basically ChatGPT, it's a pre-training. It's an AI platform, OpenAI.
Right.
It does human-like text, and it's been trained on large data sets of conversational dialogues. And it's doing all kinds of things. You can go test it out for free. I'll tell you in a minute where you can go to check it out. But what's really interesting is that people in the mortgage industry are using it. And the biggest use of it right now is in lead gen. You can actually take all the letters and all the contacts and notes and information that you've ever done or you'd like to do in lead generation, and you can go into ChatGPT, create a free account, pop it in there, and it will generate for you automatically all kinds of information. You can have it do ghostwriting. You can have it do marketing, lead letters, all the things you're looking for.
Yes.
Maybe you want to write it, but you just need that little edge. So go check out this technology. It's being used in real estate. It's being used. People are playing with this and asking how much in the commercial real estate side, how much will it cost if I have 15 units in the strip mall and X, Y, and Z. And there's all kinds of people testing this thing out. Our world is going to change. Sometime in the future – Mark, I know. I still remember. Well, David, I know you'd like to get rid of your flip phone. I've got app fatigue. And, Mark, I know that, you know, we've had the supermarket and checkout, self-checkout conversation. check this thing out. I don't know when it will affect us. I think some people are starting to use it, but really interesting. And by the way, I was looking at an article even more specifically on ChatGPT, which I thought was pretty cool. And it was a real estate agent went and put all of these different things in there about all these different properties, and it went out and it generated exactly what he needed to do the marketing. But not only did it do that, it created it better than he said he's ever done it. And then on top of that, another person went, somebody that went into a pre-construction home and couldn't open her windows, and she attempted to contact a developer for many months. She took all the different contacts and everything, and she put it into ChatGPT. And ChatGPT said it's pending on the edge of a legal issue, wrote a letter that she sent to the contractor, and he immediately came and fixed it. So maybe the angle and the way that it did its writing, I myself haven't tested it out, but you want to check it out. You've got some free time on your hands because you're so operationally efficient. But ChatGPT, and you can easily just go out there on the internet and Google how to get signed up.
After you brought this up the last time, I went out there and started looking at it. It's writing books. I mean, I was talking to several other people, but this is writing books for people. It is, you know, where you, like both Mark and I have a ghostwriter. Love the guy. Matt Harms is one of the best ghostwriters. I love what he's done. He's so good at it. But you can have these books write and publish. I was talking to another person. I brought it up in a conversation, and they said, you've got to check this out. This is the way of the future and what's going on. Well, how I experienced it, Alan, just to go off on this a little bit, is I started getting text messages. I'm flying out to Indian Wells, out to Palm Springs for the wedding this weekend, and stayed at the Indian Wells Hyatt Regency. I started getting these really friendly, nice text message, hey, you're coming in. No, you're coming in at this time. Would you, give us your estimated time arrival? Want to make sure we have your room ready, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff, just really personal outreach. I'm going back and forth, and I go, by the way, who's the person behind the curtain there? It's in there that's sending out these texts when I checked in. This is very helpful. I mean, I was having full-on conversations, Alan. I mean, like, well, my flight's delayed. I've got this going on. I'm coming in on this time. They said, hey, by the way, do you guys have a shuttle that can come and pick me up so I don't have to do the Uber? And they said, no, unfortunately, no. We've been looking at that. But it's the way in which they had the conversation. It was so personal. And she goes, no, you were talking to our technology. I said, dang, is that good stuff? That is really good. I was impressed. But we're using it.
Yeah.
More.
It's good stuff.
Guys like,
and if you think of the mortgage and marketing side, that's a really interesting angle to test it out.
I wanted, we don't get specific in the podcast that we're releasing tomorrow with Keith Pulaski. He doesn't get specific in some of these things, but that's one of the things you can do. I'll tell you, we were talking with David Kittle on the topic that we're kind of blending some of these segments together. So let me just go on a little rant here again, Alan, just for a quick second. David, we're talking about the cross originate. And I think one of the things that we're going to look at is because we're not willing to have the tough conversations, someone is going to come in out of the blue and create with the technologies that are like what we're talking about, the ChatGPT. They're going to be creating ways in which we originate loans that are so much more lower cost on the thing we're talking about. Like with Keith Pulaski, he still pays the traditional amounts out to all his loan originators. He says, I'm not touching that. Don't need to. I found an area where I can make cuts and have an impact. And go listen to the podcast we got coming up. We're releasing tomorrow. And so anyway, a lot more on what you can do there. I'll let you go on, Alan. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. No, it's a great, great topic. Another place that there's a lot of AI is in Microsoft Excel. And I'm not suggesting that you run your entire BI platform on Excel, but especially if you use Power BI, there's a lot of suggestive data analytics and models that it can do from the data automatically. But I just want to answer the one quick question, and we could talk next week more detail on BI. Because this one gentleman asked me, can you do anything without spending any money in tech? And the answer is yes. You're still spending the money to have the platform and to be in business and be working every day. But from what he meant, I totally understand. The reality is when you look at business intelligence, you have to look at, are you looking for actionable data or are you looking to report on past data? And it's a big difference because if you're looking just to learn the data and look at past data, then Excel's great. Even Power BI, you need a little more expertise to do it, but you can do it. When you want real-time analytics that are going to drive your business and they're actionable and they help steer the train, right? When's the next train coming, and you know, when can this train go into the shop, and all those things, and then you need real-time analytics, and you need a platform that's modeling and managing data. And the cost, forget about the cost of getting the data and having folks internally on your staff. The cost of the software can be on average $5,000 to $25,000. And in some cases, depending on how much you're going to use it, it could be up to $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
So there's the difference between the two. You can do it low cost with Microsoft Excel. And then maybe next week, David, we'll focus a little bit more on what it takes to actually build your own BI. So build versus buy on the business intelligence side.
No, I think it's a good point. I mean, to our sponsors that are out there, we know what you bring. It's a value add that you bring. And I think there's something I want to make sure everyone understands. I mean, the vendors we have out there, there's some really good ones, like Simple Nexus and what they're doing, Total Expert. I mean, you're not going to get the same thing as what you get. But if you're a startup operation where you can't afford these technologies, or you're making cuts because you've just gotten seriously whacked, you can use these tools. And I want to make I love a guy that I'm consulting to is Michael DiClemente out of Watson Mortgage here down in Jacksonville, Florida, down your neck of the woods. And he is, he's pretty decent at technology, but this is a really, really, really small mortgage company. And you should see what he has developed in Power BI. It's just within their regular Microsoft license. No, we recommend you using one of our sponsors' technology. We can do an ROI. Brett Taylor does one of the best, Simple Nexus does one of the best ROIs analysis on companies out there. But there are times where you just can't afford it. And that's where someone like Michael DiClemente has figured it out and built some really elegant stuff out of it. So I think, and what he said, Dave, what's so helpful about me building some of my own stuff, that within Power BI and Excel and that, is that when I do go out and look for a solution where I license a solution, then what I have is the knowledge I have of what I want in the next tech solution is so much more developed because of the thought and intentionality of what I've built within these more simple, basic solutions. So very interesting. Alan, good report. Good stuff. Gets us thinking. Great question. Love when people ask you good questions, Alan. You always come back with great responses. All right, let's wrap this podcast up. We've almost been at this. We have 4 minutes to close the door on this podcast. We're so grateful to have you as our listeners. But let's go around, Mr. Kittle, and then Alan, and then Mark. Mr. Kittle, anything you want to add on reflect on all of this?
No, that was a great conversation today. Really nothing else to add. We'd kind of be redundant at this point.
Yeah.
And I think everybody needs to keep their powder dry and hunker down, and remember your relationships.
Yes, remember your relationships.
And we'll get through it.
We will. Very good. Alan, that's good. Good report, Alan. Anything else you want to add as you think about it, generally speaking, as we exit?
You know, David, just to echo what everyone else in this podcast says, it's just great feedback and content each week, great conversation. Just remember to listen to us, and thank you so much for doing so. And we look forward to next week.
Yeah, the biggest compliment we get is the feedback and just the fact that you take time to listen, listeners. Really do. Mark, you've said this so much. You said, I mean, you're a veteran. You could have retired. You've done so well financially in this industry. You could have retired, you know, but you've chosen to give back, and I'm so grateful. But your thoughts as we wrap it up.
Well, I'm going to end this podcast with my famous two words, really three words: knowledge is power. And I think that if we do our job on this podcast, which I think we do, and we impart one piece of knowledge to one person, we have done our job for the week, because that's what it's all about, is making sure people have the opportunity to learn some things they haven't heard before, or find the right people to reach out to learn those things. Because the more knowledge our people have in the industry, the better job they're going to do. They're going to be more productive. They're going to serve their clients better, and they're going to be more successful. So to do that, as long as we continue to bring people that provide technology, people that provide thought process on market, people that bring experience like Mr. Kittle, who can talk about anything, as long as we continue to bring people and Alan with the technology, as long as we continue to bring that, it's going to all merge together into not a perfect picture, but a picture people can look at and say, what are the pieces of knowledge gained here that I can use tomorrow? and what I can use the next day and the day after that. And that's our biggest contribution to the industry. And I'm just so proud, very proud to be a part of it.
I'm proud to pleased to have you be a part of it, Mark, as well as everyone else. We're so grateful. And why can we do this? And what's the cost of this podcast to you, the listener? Free. Nothing, zero, nada. And that's because of our sponsors. So a special thank you to our sponsors, Candor, Finastra, FormFree, Total Experts, Simple Nexus, MBA, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modex. My gosh, I love those two companies, what they're doing when it comes to recruiting, and all of our lenders, all of our vendors. I just, those two popped out here because I was using those tools here recently. And then Mortgage Advisory Tools. So check them all out. We appreciate it. Go to our website, Looking on Lending, and check out our sponsors. We encourage you to do so. They make this podcast possible. Thank you, listeners, for being out there sharing this viral. Make it go viral. We're already kind of viral, but we want even more. We want to make a difference to more people. That's the perspective. Keep your attitude up. This is going to pass. These difficult, challenging times, more and more people are going out and exiting out permanently. I just, like one guy said, you know, I'm not trying to quell the, I'm not trying to feed the negativity, but seeing this negativity, I sit back and smile because it's going to be just that much more market where this thing turns around. We appreciate you, our listeners. Thank you. Go to the website, Looking on Lending. Love to hear your text, your comments. Go on LinkedIn, or you can text me at 512-632-2900. Love to hear from you. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licking of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.